Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm not.
Say your name.
I'm Joe.
Yes, and we are here to do Chapter 16, Through the Trapdoor, which is the penultimate chapter in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, which means we're almost done with this book.
Almost.
Yep, and really we're probably like a tenth of the way through the series as a whole. Probably less than that, honestly, because the chapter numbers only go up from here. But we're here to do Chapter 16, Through the Trapdoor, and it is my turn to do the chapter summary. So Harry and company complete their final exams. Harry's scar is bothering him and he feels that danger is coming, but they are reassured that Voldemort and Snape won't try to do anything related to the stone because Dumbledore is around and they're afraid of him. Hagrid reveals that Fluffy can be put asleep by music and that he told that to the man that he won the dragon egg off of in the pub. Dragon Age is a video game series made by BioWare, who is owned by EA, the worst company in the world.
All of that is necessary for the plot summary,
yes.
I promise.
So believing that Snape has the info that he needs to get to the stone, Harry, Ron, and Hermione try to alert Dumbledore, but learns from McGonagall that he's been called away on an urgent matter by the Ministry of Magic. The three conclude that this is a ruse to get Dumbledore out of the way, and they resolve to get to the stone before Snape. They pass through the trapdoor and face the trials that are there to protect the stone. And that's my chapter summary. Obviously, a lot more happens. This, I think, is probably the longest chapter so far. So we're going to have a good conversation about this. I have 4 pages of notes. So.
I have several things highlighted.
Oh, goody. All right. So my first note was early in the chapter, and it's that Harry says he manages to pass his exams despite expecting Voldemort to come bursting through the door at any moment.
Yes, I love that visual. I know we don't really have a description of Voldemort yet, other than the bloody cloaked figure.
Yeah.
But even that just like bursting into an exam.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's a funny visual. And I was just thinking, like, on a larger level across all the books, it's kind of a miracle that Harry manages to do okay in school, given what is going on at Hogwarts and in his life at the time. And that miracle's name is Hermione Granger.
Yes, yeah, like, she is the reason that the three of them are passing it all.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe not absolutely, because we learn later on that Harry is proficient in another subject specifically. But that's all extra stuff. I also felt this was a little bit of a spoiler, because the way that it's written is years later, when Harry like thought back to this time, he had no idea how he passed. So like knowing that they're going into this immeasurable danger by going through the trapdoor and trying to stop Snape and Voldemort. Not that we really think that Harry is going to die, but it does confirm that he survives this a little bit.
It's interestingly worded. It's in years to come, Harry would never quite remember how he managed to get through his exams. That there's a couple things I noticed in this. The way the narrator is talking this chapter, and we'll get into those when we come to him. But it seems like, for this point, it seems like, oh, I have no idea what happened, and like, that's how I'm always going to remember it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the series is told through third-person omniscient, which I think we've talked about before. Nobody is saying, I did this, I did that, unless they're like directly speaking. But it's a limited omniscient. The narrator knows the thoughts of some characters. Almost always that's Harry. So I see what you're saying, that the narrator is like almost taking a peek into Harry's brain and pulling the story out of that.
Yeah, there's another point where it just seems like the narrator is also a character in the story. They watch the birds soaring overhead, glittering. Glittering?
Oh, yeah, I do see what you're saying. So this is when they notice the keys flying overhead. They think they're birds at first. And yeah, that is interesting, the way that it's kind of set off, like the narrator is almost commenting, realizing in that moment.
Like as Harry's realizing, the narrator is realizing.
Yeah.
It seems like Harry is narrating this himself.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, again, I really don't want to fault Rowling's writing, because I think that I could never write a book like this or anything. I think she grows a lot as a writer, and this is evidence of it being a very early piece of her writing, that she hasn't really figured out how she wants to narrate the books yet, I don't think. And I think that that years later thing, especially in later books, when there's this constant tension of survival, she would never drop something like that in the kind of lead up to the climax,
yeah,
like this, where we know that everybody's going to come out of this okay, or at least Harry's going to come out of this okay. So it was interesting to see that. Again, I thought the comment was funny about Voldemort bursting through the room, but bursting into the room. But when I really thought about it, yeah, it's a weird narration thing. And I didn't pick up on that thing with the keys.
So I don't know. At the moment, it seems like Harry is narrating to himself. It almost seems like as a way to calm himself down.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah. So
like talking himself through it in the years to come.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting through this and I have no idea how.
Okay. That's an interesting theory. Harry writing these books as a kind of therapy for his experiences.
It doesn't seem like it's backed up in any other chapter.
It's a theory. not a good one, but an interesting one. So they're taking their exams. I did note that the transfiguration exam is to turn a mouse into a snuff box. I did not know what a snuff box was.
Not a clue, but I also didn't care enough to look it up.
I did look it up. It is an ornamental box.
For snuff?
No, it's just like a decorated box. It's also apparently there's an anatomical snuff box, which is the like muscle. Right here, I'm motioning to Joe, but the muscle that kind of connects your wrist to your thumb right here. For some people, it's more indented than others. You can Google anatomical snuff box and see the pictures on Wikipedia, which is what I did. Apparently, it's called that because snuff boxes were traditionally used to like store tobacco a lot of the time. And people would like put tobacco there. I don't know. There's a Wikipedia page. Look it up on Wikipedia.
So snuff boxes hold tobacco?
They don't have to. They're just like ornamental boxes. You can put like jewelry or something in there too, but a lot of people put tobacco in them. I don't know. Because like tobacco has to be kept dry and like at a normal temperature. I don't know. I don't smoke. it has to be kept dry. I know that. So putting it in a little box like that where it'd be kept safe would make sense. And you might as well make it look pretty. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am a little disappointed you skipped straight over Professor Flitwick's exam, which was to make a pineapple dance across a table.
Yeah, that's useful magic that they'll need in their everyday life.
Yeah. And also, I'm disappointed that they didn't tell us what charm that is.
Yeah, that could have been the spell of the week.
Dancing fruit charm.
You'll have to do some research on that one. yeah, so they take all their exams. I believe it's History of Magic that is their last one. Yes. And they walk out of it like, oh, we're free. No more exams.
The class actually cheers at the end of the exam.
Which, I could see 11-year-olds doing that.
Oh, yeah. Their final exams for the year.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I did a little research. Hermione mentions two things that she studied but didn't need to know about. One of them is Elfric the Eager, and the other is the 1637 Werewolf Code of Conduct. And I just wanted to know what those were. The 1637 Werewolf Code of Conduct was an effort by the ministry to kind of police werewolves a little bit.
Okay.
Werewolves were expected to come into the ministry and sign the code, which promised that they were not going to attack people and that they would lock themselves up at every full moon to help keep themselves under control. The problem with this is that nobody ever signed the code because nobody wanted to admit to being a werewolf. So that's a silly little detail there. There wasn't anything I found on Elfric the Eager. Both the Harry Potter lexicon and the Harry Potter wiki speculated that it was he was part of the goblin rebellions because they mentioned those in a previous chapter regarding History of Magic.
Okay.
But there's no evidence in the books to correlate that or in any of the like things outside the books. However, Elfric is an old Anglo-Saxon name. There's a bunch of bishops with the name who I did not find to be notable at all. But the most prominent is Elfric of Einsham, who translated and commented on a bunch of biblical texts. He also translated Latin grammar into vernacular English, which he was the first to do so in medieval Europe.
Okay.
And he wrote guides to help students translate and speak Latin. So perhaps Elfric the Eager was eager to get people to learn Latin.
Okay. And from there, we jump straight to them going outside, celebrating the test being over. And we have a very fun little bit about the Weasley twins and Lee Jordan tickling the giant squid.
Yes. And this is the first appearance of the giant squid. The giant squid does other mentionable things, but that I will not get into because they would be spoilers for the later books. But the giant squid is awesome. I highly recommend everybody who doesn't care about spoilers to look at its page on the Harry Potter lexicon.
It's pretty great. The giant squid is a lot of fun. It's nice to think like, oh, the giant squid's just like, it likes hanging out with students. It likes getting tickled, I guess.
Yeah, I like that that's a totally throwaway line, too. Of yeah. Just like, yeah, they're at school. They're hanging out by the lake, relaxing. The giant squid is there, you know, whatever. Yeah,
he's sunbathing in shallow water. And you usually think of, okay, it's the Weasley twins and Lee Jordan. They're pranking something. They're doing something wrong. And here they're just like tickling the giant squid. Yeah. The giant squid is very okay with it.
Before that, though, it does say that Hermione wanted to like go through the exam and talk about every question with Harry and Ron. But Ron claims that this makes him ill. And so instead they go and relax outside. So I did enjoy that prior to the giant squid bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a fun beginning of a chapter, especially given what ends up happening. So they're sitting outside relaxing and Harry notices an owl flying up above towards the castle with a letter in its mouth, which is a cool little detail because we later learn that that's a letter for Dumbledore from the ministry. And I'm doing air quotes there from the
very
ministry.
Good for podcasts.
Yeah.
It's a nice audio thing.
Yes. Once we get into video, that the air quotes will become more important. So they see this letter going by and Harry has something nagging at him. He's thinking like, I've forgotten something important. There was something important I needed to do. And then he realizes he was going to ask Hagrid about the man that gave him the dragon egg at the Hog's Head.
Well, he doesn't realize that's what was happening. He has something in the back, but he's like, oh, you know, what am I forgetting? But it wasn't that he was meaning to ask about that. He was trying to figure out, like, he pieces it together in that moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know what was actually nagging him, but, like, he figures everything out.
Maybe
as he sees that owl and thinks about Hagrid.
Mortal danger that was nagging at him.
Yeah. Maybe he's like, oh, I forgot about Voldemort for a little bit.
So they go down to Hagrid's and Harry is like, Hagrid, this man at the pub, like, who was he? Did you ever see his face? And Hagrid's like, no, he wore a cloak. He did ask me a bunch of questions about Hogwarts. I don't really remember because he kept buying me drinks and I was getting kind of drunk. And there are a lot of weird people at the Hog's Head. So it's not that weird. Harry, of course, knows it's pretty weird.
Mm-hmm. I do want to point out, though, they go and see Hagrid right after the exams. He's so excited to see them. Oh, you finished your exams. You want to have a drink? And, you know, Ron's going along with it. And Harry's just, no, we're in a hurry.
Do you think that Hagrid was offering them alcohol?
Maybe butterbeer.
Okay. What's the legal drinking age in the UK?
16.
But they do drink butterbeer.
Butterbeer has very low alcohol content, if any.
Okay.
And it's a typical thing in like olden European times to drink like light alcohol rather mm-hmm. than water because water was toxic.
Okay.
I don't know how well that transferred over to the magical world and modern day, but
Manchester Evening News claims that you can drink alcohol at 18 in licensed premises in the UK. Unless you are accompanied by an adult, in which case you can drink at 16 or 17.
Okay, so that's where I got that from, I guess.
Yeah, in which case it's legal for you to drink, but not to buy the alcohol. So Hagrid offering it to them, if they were older, I guess would be fine, but we don't know how it works in the magical world. So,
but
whatever.
Also, like, he's sitting out in the sun. Maybe he's offering them some lemonade.
Yeah, okay. So Harry's like, no, we're on a mission. And he asks Hagrid all these questions. But yeah, that is kind of a part of what I think we talked about last episode of them just kind of going to Hagrid when they need to pump him for information.
Yeah.
So yeah, Harry asks Hagrid all these questions and he finds out that the man asked about the other kind of creatures that Hagrid takes care of at Hogwarts. Hagrid mentioned Fluffy and he mentions that the way to get Fluffy to go to sleep is to just play a bit of music. And then he says, I shouldn't have told you that.
Yeah, right away.
Yeah. And then Harry, Ron and Hermione storm off.
Like, no, like, goodbye.
No,
it's literally, I shouldn't have told you that. Forget I said it. Hey, where are you going?
They storm off because they're like, that's it. that hooded man was Snape or it was Voldemort, and now they know how to get past Fluffy. And that's
they
it.
Also say it must have been easy once he'd got Hagrid drunk.
Yeah. This is not a good book for Hagrid.
No, he is not put in a great light.
No.
And it's very clear he can't hold a secret.
Well, they do say that Hagrid would die before he would sell out Dumbledore. But
yes,
I guess.
But they also say that Neville will play Quidditch for England before Hagrid lets Dumbledore down.
Maybe that is what Neville will go on to do.
We'll find out.
We will find out. So they realize, oh no, Snape knows the business. That's it. So they go and they're like, we need to talk to Dumbledore. Like, that's it. Because this is happening. Mm-hmm. And they're like, wait, where does Dumbledore live?
We don't know where Dumbledore's office is. I doubt he lives in his office, though.
Yeah, and they, like, look around. It says that they're, like, expecting a sign to be somewhere, like, oh, Dumbledore's office this way. Mm-hmm. They cannot find it. They do find Professor McGonagall, though, who's carrying a stack of books and asking, like, what are you three doing outside, inside? Because it's beautiful outside. Like,
yeah. Stop. All your tests are done. Go outside. Have fun.
Yeah. And they tell her, they say, like, hey, where's Dumbledore? Where's Dumbledore? We need to tell him something. It's a secret. And she's like, listen, Dumbledore's a busy guy. He doesn't have time for your nonsense. And also, he was called off on an urgent task or whatever by the ministry. And that, we learn, is the owl that Harry saw. Or we can assume that that's the owl that Harry saw.
You can really just guess.
Yeah, I just thought it was a cool little detail that we hear about the owl and then we learn this a couple pages later.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible that the owl was going to the owlery where all the mail goes in.
Maybe.
But Harry says, oh, it's important. And McGonagall says, something you have to say is more important than the Ministry of Magic, Potter.
And then he's like, it's about the Philosopher's Stone. And McGonagall drops her books on the ground.
Yeah, she was not looking for that answer.
No. And she's like, how on earth do you know about that? And also, nobody's stealing the stone. It's well protected. Go outside
and
have
some fun. One of my spells is protecting you.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody can get past my stuff. So she kind of tells him off. And now they're really upset because they're like, he's going to do it tonight because Dumbledore is away. So yeah. They send Hermione to wait outside the teacher's lounge and alert someone when she sees Snape or try to hold Snape up if she sees him leaving.
She was just going
to
like follow him around.
Maybe.
And
it's a lot
pretend
of fun.
She was looking for Flitwick.
It's a lot of fun to think of Hermione following Snape around and like trying to hide and being a spy and that kind of thing.
And we find very soon she's bad at it.
She is bad at it. Yeah. And her cover story is that she's going to ask Professor Flitwick about her exam.
Yes.
whereas Harry and Ron are going to go up to the third floor and guard the door to Fluffy.
And they find once again, Professor McGonagall, who knew they were going to go there. And she's insulting them, saying, do you really think you're stronger than any enchantments that we have set up?
Which I loved because she's right. Like, if
11-year-olds are blocking the door and somebody's trying to get through and steal something.
If Snape is on a mission from Voldemort, yeah, those 11-year-olds are not doing a thing.
Yeah.
It was very funny, though. And so they go away from the door and they meet up with Hermione and she's like, I'm sorry. He was leaving the teacher's lounge and I said he was looking for Flitwick and I said I was looking for Flitwick and then he offered to find Flitwick and then we started talking about my charms exam and Snape got away. And it was very funny. So that plan did not work out. So Harry takes the leap that the only logical step from here is going to be to go through the trap door and get to the stone first.
Yes. Yeah, so they're saying, oh, you're going to get expelled. You're going to lose house points.
Well, first, I want to talk about that plan in general,
okay.
Because like the plan to have Harry and Ron guard the door, I don't know how well thought out this one is.
He's going to catch him in the act and say, swiper, no swiping.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be done.
Yeah, of course. That's what's going to happen. But really, if Harry, say, got to the stone first, then Snape or Voldemort or whoever shows up, what happens then? Like, what's Harry's plan then?
Fight them.
But see, that's the thing. Harry's plans are always just, I'll improvise.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm going to do this super brave and daring thing to stop evil.
But
and
I don't know what I'm doing.
I'll figure out the particulars later. I have to do this. And that's really important in this chapter. And so that's when Ron and Hermione, do the whole, like, you're going to be expelled. Like, what are you going to lose house points? What, you know, all this terrible stuff's going to happen.
And Harry goes off on this long rant, and he said a couple of really good lines.
I want you to read the whole rant.
The whole rant.
The whole rant.
So what? He shouted. Don't you understand? If Snape gets hold of the stone, Voldemort's coming back. Haven't you heard what it was like when he was trying to take over? There won't be any Hogwarts to get expelled from. He'll flatten it or turn it into a school for the dark arts. Losing points doesn't matter anymore. Can't you see? Do you think he'll leave you and your family alone if Gryffindor wins the House Cup? If I get caught before I get to the stone, well, I'll have to go back to Dursley's and wait for Voldemort to find me there. It's only dying a bit later than I would have, because I'm never going over to the dark side. I'm going through that trapdoor tonight, and nothing you two say is going to stop me. Voldemort killed my parents, remember?
So playing that pity card right at the end there.
Yeah, just ending it off with, like, my parents are dead, remember?
Yeah, but it, to me, is the most Harry has been Harry yet in this book. The Harry that we understand, you and me, from having read all these books. I think that you could transplant this speech and change some of the specifics into any of the seven books, and you're like, yep, that's Harry. You can take the Harry said off of it and the Voldemort killed his parents, and you can identify this speech as Harry. And I think that that's a larger thing with this chapter, because this chapter is where we see the three characters really come into their own and be the best that they can be. And I love that. And I have more stuff about that later. But this is an important one because he's not worried about school or his own life. He's just worried about stopping evil, even if it comes at a personal cost. He's willing to sacrifice himself for that.
But he's also saying that no matter what, he's dying. Like,
yeah, he's very okay with his own mortality.
Well, it's not that. It's that if he doesn't do something, he's guaranteed to die.
Sure.
Whether it's sitting in the Gryffindor Tower or at home with the Dursleys.
Yeah. And he's able to look beyond the things that people usually let stop them when trying to stand up against injustice. So, like, if this had been just Ron and Hermione on this, you know, thread and who know about this mystery, they might not have done anything because they are worried about the sort of not trivial things in life, but the smaller things in life of, like, getting in trouble at school, losing house points, that kind of thing. And I think this is relevant in a way to real life when we look at people who recognize that injustice is happening in the world, but don't do anything about it. You know, people won't go to protests because they say, like, oh, I'd have to take a day off of work and I don't want to get, if the police show up, I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to get in trouble. And so they just kind of let that injustice happen. And there are a lot of complicated reasons why people don't go to protests, and some people need to work for money, and there's a whole bunch of things. But I think it's important to note that Harry isn't letting any of that external stuff stop him. He sees injustice and he knows, I'm going to do something about that, which ties into our conversation about agency from last chapter.
Yes, and it does relate directly back to he still doesn't know what's going on, and he's going into this, you know, half-cocked, and like, what's going to happen? He runs into someone, like, he runs into Snape in his head. He's going to just go stop Snape.
Yeah, because he's like, I'll figure it out. And that's an interesting thing, too, with Harry, that I think he truly believes that because his cause is just, he's going to figure it out. Like, the particulars aren't important, that a good person doing a good thing, things will work out for them. And if it doesn't work out, then it's better than the alternative because at least they did something.
Yes. In his head, he's going to die. Like, if he does nothing or if he fails, he's going to die at the hands of Voldemort.
Yes. He wants to die standing up for something, though.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Harry.
Hermione, right after that, Ron says, okay, we're going with you.
I want to talk about that Ron line before you skip over it. Because Harry is going through this whole speech and he's like, I'll take the invisibility cloak. I'm going through the trapdoor. He's saying he's not expecting Ron and Hermione to do this stuff with him. So he's like, I'll take the invisibility cloak. And then Ron says, will it fit over the three of us? To Ron, it's just implied, like, we're with you, Harry. We're going with you. And maybe that's pointing to how persuasive Harry's speech was. I think it's more about what a good friend Ron is.
I think it was never a matter of Harry's doing it alone.
Yeah.
The two of them, Harry was never going to do this alone. It was either no one was doing it or they're all doing it.
But Harry's assuming he's alone in it. And so I think that there could have been a moment of realization there, like, yeah, Ron and Hermione are with me. He doesn't really get to have that nice moment because, you know, mortal danger is approaching. But Yeah, it's such a good line for Ron. And again, that's me in this chapter. I love this chapter because it's the character showing who they are. Ron is showing, I'm with you no matter what, Harry.
And Hermione really shows who she is when she says, how do you think you'd get to the stone without us?
And then she also says, they're never going to expel me from Hogwarts because Flitwick told me that I got an 112% on my charms exam and yes. They're not kicking me out after that. Oh, it's so good. I love her.
But like, even Hermione knows Harry couldn't do this alone. Like,
yeah.
Harry should know he doesn't know what he's doing. And immediately he falls back on the two of them right away.
And I have so much about that to get to when we get to them, like, actually going through the trapdoor. I love this chapter. So they resolve to do this. They stay up late. They wait in the common room with the invisibility cloak. And they're going to leave once everybody has kind of filtered out of the common room. And so once that happens, or they believe that it happens, they get up to go. And they're met with an obstacle.
Yes. So Neville spins around in his armchair. Well, no, he stands up from behind an armchair.
Sweet Neville, holding his toad, clutching him, stands up to his friends.
If only that armchair turned, because I would definitely be picturing, you know, him, evil guy with a cat, you know, petting the cat.
Swiveling saying, around.
Oh, so you're trying to sneak out again.
But Neville puts his fists up and says, you're the ones that told me to stand up to people. I'm standing up to you. Can't keep breaking rules. And Ron says, like,
yes, but not to us.
Yeah. And that's
which is so wrong.
It is. He wants it both ways. He's like, stand up to people, but we're right. So don't stand up to us because we're doing something important here.
Yeah. And there are so many times in this book where they don't explain everything to Neville.
Yeah.
And this would have been another time, like if they had more time to do it.
Well, this is it reaching critical mass that they haven't included Neville in any of this stuff, even though he's an important character. And I would argue like a tertiary part of their friend group. They don't tell anyone outside of the two of them and kind of Hagrid what's going on. So Neville is left in the dark and he's just saying like they're breaking rules for no reason. What are they doing?
Yeah, I just stopped them from getting caught with a dragon.
Yeah.
And they abandoned me in the woods.
Yeah. So Neville decides this is it. I'm standing up to them. And again, it's the characters coming into who they are. It's such a good chapter.
Yeah.
But Neville, unfortunately, is unable to stop them.
And Harry turns to Hermione and says, do something. He says it desperately to Hermione.
Yeah.
Hermione's the one that we see helps Neville in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Like, meets him for the first time immediately. Oh, yeah, I'll find your toad for you. Helps him throughout. Is probably one of Neville's best friends, of the three of them.
Yeah, I think he is appealing to Hermione in the sense of you're good friends with Neville, so say something that can help him. And
that's
also, like,
what?
He sees Hermione manipulate Hagrid a couple chapters ago, so, like, maybe she's expecting him, maybe he's expecting her to do that kind of fancy footwork on Neville as well.
Yes, and jumping back a little bit to see Hermione's fancy footwork of words, Neville catches them and says, you're going out again. Hermione says, no, we're not. Why don't you go back to bed, Neville? Like, immediately, no, but also leave.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Harry is thinking Hermione's going to say something. Hermione's going to convince him. Hermione's going to do something. That's not what she does.
Hermione goes 0 to 10.
She uses our namesake spell, Petrificus Totalus, which if you are actually reading these books for the first time along with us,
explains a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure the name made no sense up until now. So she uses Petrificus Totalus on him. He freezes up and they just walk over him.
They walk over his frozen body.
Yeah, She turns him over. She apologizes profusely.
Yeah, they feel bad about it, kind of. But they have more important things going on.
Yes.
But we'll talk more about Petrificus Totalus in a later segment. So they get to the third floor corridor. They pass Mrs. Norris on the way and Ron suggests kicking her.
Really wants to. He's already put a spell on one of his close friends. He wants to kick a cat.
Yeah. So they get to the third floor corridor without really getting stopped until they meet Peeves.
Peeves, who is loosening the carpet so that people would trip down the stairs.
What does that mean, loosening the carpet? Oh, I guess the carpet would be like glued down to the stairs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds like he's peeling up the carpeted stairs and hoping people will just fall down.
What
these
a hilarious
moving staircases.
And Harry gets a stroke of genius and decides to whisper to him, like, I'm the Bloody Baron. I have my reasons for being invisible. Get out of here, Peeves.
And Peeves falls for it hard. Like, he's afraid of the Bloody Baron. Originally, he's saying, oh, you're invisible, but I know someone's here. Let me just get Filch. I'd like to hear what an 11-year-old's impression of a deep, gravelly voice is, though.
That's a good thought.
So I don't know how gullible Peeves is, if he was just desperate to, like, if there's a chance this is the Bloody Baron, I'm not dealing with it.
Yeah. So Peeves leaves, and they go through the door to see Fluffy. And Harry pulls out the flute that Hagrid gave him for Christmas, and which Joe and I forgot about. He pulls out the flute and starts playing it to put Fluffy to sleep. This is the single worst moment in any of the Harry Potter video games. The PC version of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, you have to put each of the three heads asleep separately, but they're on a timer. So you have to, like, get them asleep before the timer runs out. It is so hard.
What's the mini game like to get the heads to sleep?
It's like just about standing and playing the flute. I don't know. It's the worst. When I played that game a couple years ago, I was stuck there for at least an hour, maybe two. It was terrible. Okay.
Well, we'll cover that when we stream all the Harry Potter video games.
I would love to do that.
It's probably not going to happen.
It'll happen. I want to talk about Fluffy.
All right.
I don't know how much I talked about Fluffy when Fluffy was first introduced, because that was like 2 years
ago. Did you go back and listen to the...
I did not.
No.
Okay. So
you might be hearing a few things over again.
Okay. Fluffy is based off of Cerberus from the Greek myth, which I believe we did talk about. Yeah, that's not the important part. Cerberus is also a three-headed dog, and he is Hades' pet, and he guards the door to the underworld to prevent the dead from leaving, which I think is an interesting thing here, because Voldemort is seeking the stone to kind of be reborn, to regain life. And so Fluffy standing there guarding the trapdoor, I think, is a cool little play on that, of preventing the dead Voldemort
from getting the elixir of life.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is also important, and this is where I want to talk about the hero's journey. Oh, wait, I have a mythology thing before that. The Fluffy falling asleep to music thing is actually also grounded in myth. In Horace's Odes, Cerberus yields to Orpheus's lyre, which lyre, like a song. Yeah, so that's a
lyre is an instrument.
That's a lute.
Look up lyre for me.
I'm pretty sure a lyre is a song. A lyre is a stringed instrument. Okay, I always thought that that was a song. Okay.
Nope.
Yeah.
You thought it was just like one song or like a type of song? Or?
Well, yeah, like yields to the lyre, like yields to the song.
Nah.
Okay. Well, Fluffy falling asleep to music is referencing that. Cerberus also falling asleep to music. So again, Rowling knows her mythology. But now I want to talk about the hero's journey. So for those who don't know, the hero's journey is an observed pattern within stories. And these stories come from across time and space. And I have a couple examples that I'll give. But a bunch of people observed this pattern when studying archetypes in literature. And the most important one was Joseph Campbell, when he published his book, The Hero of a Thousand Faces, where he kind of outlined the steps of the hero's journey. And the argument is that all of these texts take this structure, take this formula for the hero. And the hero goes through, you know, each of these steps in their journey towards, it varies, but it's an observable pattern within books and stories and whatever. And one of those steps in the hero's journey is the descent into the underworld. And that's called katabasis in ancient Greek, to go down. And that's kind of where we talk about it with the monomyth. Monomyth being the hero's journey, one story across many things. So Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, taken as just one book, fits the hero's journey really, really well. Harry has many of the criteria that Lord Raglan outlines as indicative of a hero story and occurring across hero stories. And Philosopher's Stone hits, I would say, almost all of the stages, if not all of them, that Joseph Campbell outlines as the hero's journey. Broadly, the entire Harry Potter series can also work as a hero's journey, but Philosopher's Stone is really tight in that it hits everything just like inside of the one book. So this going down into the trapdoor, passing Fluffy, passing Cerberus, is very much, I would argue, the descent into the underworld that the hero's journey is referencing. And this descent into the underworld can be into the depths of the earth. They're literally going down into this chamber that's holding the stone, or a descent into the depths of yourself, learning about yourself. And
both definitely happens.
Yes. Yeah. And Carl Jung, who is a mostly known for being a psychologist, but who also studied archetypes and the hero's journey, he believed that the descent into the underworld exposes what he called the shadow, which, according to this thing that I read about it, to summarize that for myself, because I don't know much about Carl Jung. Her name is Linda Lappin. She's an author. She describes the shadow as the repressed, negative, and unfavorable aspects of oneself that we have to realize in order to understand our true selves. So again, that descent into the underworld is exposing our true selves. So what I've been saying all this time about the characters realizing who they are, that's happening because they are making this descent. They're confronted with danger. And so their true qualities are coming out. Harry is proving himself by going down here. Ron and Hermione are doing it too, because they're going with him. And that's an interesting thing with the hero's journey too, that Harry isn't doing all of this alone, which the hero does get mentors, but Ron and Hermione are going along with him. So they're all realizing the shadow. They're realizing their true selves. It's so good. This is such a good chapter. And this is an observable pattern that I encourage people to look for across fantasy texts, because everybody's borrowing from this mythology. Rowling is setting out to write a hero's story, and Harry is that hero. Joe's familiar with the hero's journey through Percy Jackson. So can you think of a moment when it doesn't have to be an explicit descent into the underworld?
There is a very explicit descent into the underworld, where they take an elevator to the underworld, and then they cross the River of Styx. The elevator turns into a boat.
Okay. And so do you see that being a moment where they learn about their true selves, or when they prove themselves in some way?
A lot comes out of it. I think earlier in the story, more of that is, more character development is happening than while they're going into hell.
Okay. So with the way that Campbell frames the hero's journey, quite often the descent in the underworld occurs kind of first, whereas here it's occurring towards the end. You can move around the steps of the hero's journey. So it sounds like with Percy Jackson occurs early on, but Harry Potter is occurring here.
I think that the characters in Harry Potter are each given their own challenge while in the underworld. So that could be another instance of their characters coming out. Here's what each one is good at.
Yes, totally.
It's still following that path.
And the thesis behind the hero's journey is that somebody needs to undergo this process in order to prove themselves as a hero. And that's why we see these repeated steps.
And also, you mentioned that the hero has mentors, but they are also known to have allies.
Yeah.
So I would argue that Hermione and Harry are, that Hermione and Ron are allies.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to talk a lot about the hero's journey over this podcast. I love it. Email us about the hero's journey at owlpost@podtrificustotalis if you want to talk about the hero's journey with me, because I will answer. All right. So they get past Fluffy.
She'll answer you in an email. I don't know if we'll dedicate more podcast time to it.
Well, I edit the podcast, so we'll see.
I'm curious how this turns out.
They jump down into the trapdoor and they land on something nice and soft that's there to break their fall.
Well, so Harry is playing the flute to put Fluffy asleep, and he volunteers, like he waves it at them while he's playing the flute, like, oh, I'll do it, I'll do it. So he gives the flute to Hermione, who gets to play as Harry jumps into the pit, says, oh, I survived. And then the rest of them jump down.
And they land on this nice soft plant.
Yes.
And Harry and Ron are the two that go down first. They're like, yeah, this is great. Hermione goes down and realizes that the plant is wrapping itself around Harry and Ron. And she manages to get away and like creep up against the wall to stay away from it. But she realizes that it's Devil's Snare, which they learned about in Herbology class. And it's a great scene. It's their first kind of trial, or not first, because Fluffy is the first trial, but is maybe then their second trial. There's a great scene here.
It's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Ron and Harry start freaking out. They're being wrapped up in it. And Hermione's just like, shut up. I'm trying to remember how to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
She sings a nice little song. Devil snare. It likes the dark and the damp. And Harry runs out. Harry yells out, so light a fire. Hermione then complains that we don't have any wood. How are we going to start a fire?
And Ron, being strangled by the devil's snare, shouts, are you a witch or not? There's no wood. start a fire. Like, you have a wand. And it's very funny. So Hermione lights her bluebell flames and makes the plant back off. This is such a good, important scene. And I love the way that it works out in the book, because each of them contribute to the solution. Hermione recognizes what it's called and starts the song. Harry is able to complete the song and give the theory behind how to get rid of it. And Ron suggests the method. Each of them contribute to get to this, to find the solution. It's not just Hermione saves the day, which is what happens in the movie. It's so good. I'm so happy the way that Rowling is able to balance across these trials, each of the characters' unique qualities and what they bring to the table and how they're able to help each other.
And they talk about just like, oh yeah, Harry's better under pressure than Hermione is right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. So Hermione is able to recall all these things, but Harry acts under pressure and Ron is able to say magic, you know, we know how to do these things. It's so good. They're working as a team. So they get past the devil's snare.
And find themselves some birds.
Yes. What they think are birds flying up on the ceiling. And there's a door across the way.
Yeah. And they think, okay, we have to get to the door. Those birds are probably going to attack us.
Yes.
And so Harry's like, oh, I'm just going to run.
Yeah. He covers his head.
Sprints to the other side of the room. Nothing happens. But he was like, yeah, I'll sacrifice myself to these birds.
Yeah. They find that the door is locked. The birds do not attack them on the way over. Door's locked and it won't respond to Alohomora.
Yes. So the narrator notices the birds are shiny. And then Harry notices it.
Yes. Harry notices that they are actually keys with wings. And that one of them must be the key to unlock the door. Ron looks at the door handle, realizes that it must be an old key, and they see some broomsticks.
An old key and a silver key.
Conveniently, there's some broomsticks, three of them.
Yes, the three is interesting.
Yeah. That's one modification I think the movie might do a little better, because there's just the one broom and they're like, oh, well, Harry is a seeker, so he can do this.
Yes. And they still point out Harry's the seeker. He's the one that's going to be able to catch it.
Yeah.
They do. That's what happens.
They do plan it out a little bit. They're like, Ron, you come from the top. Hermione, come from the middle so that it doesn't get away from us.
And it just flies to the side anyway. Yeah.
Harry smashes it against a wall with his hand.
Yeah. He doesn't gracefully catch it.
Yeah.
He slaps it like a fly.
Yeah.
And they describe it as Harry leaned forward and with a nasty crunching noise, pinned it against the stone with one hand.
And I guess that crunching noise is its wings, because they mention later it must be crumpled. To me, that was Harry broke his wrist doing this.
Really? No, I definitely heard it as the wings are just crunching up and cracking.
I was picturing him flying full speed at the wall with his arm outstretched.
And breaking his wrist.
Popping his hand against. Yeah. So they're able to open up the door and get to the next task, and that is the chessboard. They realize that they need to take the place of chess pieces and play across the board.
Important correction. We're going to have to be chessmen.
Why is that an important correction?
I've never heard anyone call them chessmen.
It might be an English thing.
Maybe, but it's entertaining.
Okay. So they realize they have to take the place of chess pieces and play across the board. My problem here, why do they have to become the chess pieces?
Well, he asked the knight and the knight shook his head.
Yes, he did ask the knight, but couldn't they theoretically just enchant the chess pieces to move and not?
They were all the chess pieces are already enchanted to move.
Yes, and I'm saying
it's a full board, too. They might have been able to tell it to play.
That's what I'm saying. They could have just told it to play and not become chess people themselves. So I question that. Jumble logic. Ron makes a really good comment here. He's like, I'm really not trying to offend you guys, but you're both terrible at chess. And Harry's like, we're not offended. Just tell us what to do. So they each take the place of a chess piece. And Ron does not sit on top of a horse as he does in the movie. He actually just takes the place of the other ones. And
he just stands where it is.
Yeah.
Which leads to a much more graphic end.
Yes. Ron gets smacked in the head and his unconscious body is dragged across the chessboard.
Yeah. And just thrown into the pile of other unconscious, possibly destroyed chess pieces.
And he does tell, he realizes he has to sacrifice himself in order for Harry to check the king.
And he tells them, all right, you're going to go on.
Yeah. Just leave me be. Don't stop for me. So they don't, but
they just leave him.
Yeah. Yeah.
With one desperate look back at Ron, Harry and Hermione charge through the door and up the next passageway. They just look back. Oh, Ron's still unconscious. I hope, you know, what if he's...
Hermione says, like, do you think he's okay? And Ron and Harry's like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he'll be all right.
Let's keep going. And like, yeah, they have important things going on, but whoo, it's cold.
So they go through and they talk about who did what. So we had Professor Sprout, the herbology teacher.
Well, Hagrid, Fluffy.
Hagrid had Fluffy. Professor Sprout, the herbology teacher, did the devil snare. Professor Flitwick must have charmed the keys. Professor McGonagall transfigured the chessmen. And that leaves Quirrell's spell and then Snape's. And the next thing they run into is an already unconscious troll.
Which we can assume is Quirrell's.
Which we know is Quirrell's because the next one is a bunch of vials and they say it's Snape's for sure. So Quirrell's is... just a troll.
Perhaps this might lead you to suspect certain things.
Yes.
They get to the potions.
They get to the potions and Hermione takes this one. This is Hermione's challenge.
She remarks, because it's a logic puzzle. So there are all these potions in front of them. And then there's a little piece of paper that if you take the clues in it, you'll be able to figure out which one will give send you forward, which one will send you back, which one will poison you.
Yeah. And she says... a lot of the greatest wizards haven't got an ounce of logic, as they'd be stuck in here forever.
And Harry says, I guess we will too.
Harry's just resigned to it. It's fine.
Yeah.
We'll be stuck in here forever.
And again, that's important. Harry works on improvisation and instinct, whereas Hermione is able to like kind of usually calmly look at the situation and use logic. This chapter really just reinforces the characters into who they are.
Harry would have just been choked to death by the devil snare, and that would have been the end of it.
Yeah. And I also like that this is her comment about the greatest wizards of all time not having any logic. It continues this trend of kind of framing the magical world as, of course, great and magical, but also nonsensical.
Yes. And some of the greatest wizards might not need to rely on logic. All their problems could be solved by magic.
Yes. And so this is a unique ability that Hermione has because she is very smart and she is muggle born. So that's something we have to consider too, that she has to learn how to operate in a world that theoretically follows logic and rationale. And she's able to bring that to the magical world, just like Ron was able to bring his unique skill with chess into the chessboard task.
So she solves this. And the first time I read this book was like 3.5 years ago.
It was when we first started dating. So yeah.
Yeah. About 3.5 years ago. And in Cassie's book was the paper that I had tried to solve it on.
Yes, I still had it.
Yes. And without looking at it, I tried to solve it again, knowing full well that there is no solution with the information we have. So I got the same exact result. And it ends up with, from left to right, a poison vial, a nettle wine, an unknown, a poison nettle wine, and then the potion to go backwards. So the two unknowns, one is to go forward and the other is a poison.
Yes. And the instructions left with this says that the smallest bottle is the one. So because we can't physically see them and Rowling never specifies like what each bottle looks like, we can't complete the puzzle with what we have in front of us as the reader.
Yes. The first time I did it, I really thought I had solved it. In my head, I read the instructions. First, however slyly the poison tries to hide, you'll always find some on nettle wine's left side. In my head, I assumed that meant there would never be poison on the nettle wine's right side. So I thought the potion to go forward would have to be the third from the left rather than the very middle. Of course, there's no way to know without a picture, and the only picture we get is from the playing card?
The trading card game. Yeah, apparently there's a card with an illustration of this scene. And so we can see which one is the smallest bottle and see what the correct pattern is.
So the clue was not the smallest bottle is the right one. The clue was essentially the biggest bottle and the smallest bottle are not poisonous.
Yeah, but you need that piece of information to complete the puzzle. Yeah, I've been trying to get my hands on the trading card game in general. I've been prevented by not wanting to spend money on the Harry Potter trading card game. Yeah, but if anybody has a picture of that card, that would be awesome if you could send that to us somehow. I would be interested to see that. But yeah, so you can't complete the puzzle with the information that's there, but Joe came pretty close.
You get partially there, and then there are potential solutions. It's either the third from the right or the very middle.
Yeah.
And according to the trading card, it is the very middle one.
Yes.
And you can see that the very middle one is the smallest one. I believe I've also seen that illustrated on Pottermore.
I'll have to look. I don't think I've seen anything, but I will definitely take a peek.
You do that right now.
Yeah, there is actually Pottermore art that we just found for it, which I will link in the show notes. And yeah, that one actually goes with Joe's first solution for it, where it's the third from the left. Yeah, so that's interesting that the Pottermore art and the TCG provide conflicting information. I believe that the TCG art was outsourced. You know, and I don't know that Rowling went and approved every single one of them. I believe she was more involved with the artwork process for Pottermore. Mm-hmm. So I would go with the Pottermore one being like the official.
Yeah, in my head, it would make sense if there's always poison to the left, there wouldn't be poison to the right of the metal wine.
Yeah, it's that ambiguity that makes the two possible solutions, but we would side on the first one.
And according to the Pottermore art, the third from the left would be the one to go forward.
Yes. So Hermione is able to parse out this puzzle, and they realize that the one to go forward only has enough for one person to use it, presumably because somebody else drank most of it. And so Harry,
if I definitely didn't want someone to follow me, I would make
finish
sure
the thing. Yeah.
There was nothing left.
I don't know.
We'll see if someone wanted this to happen.
I guess maybe, though, if you want to go back, like let's say Voldemort makes it through all of this, leaves with his now resurrected body and wants to come back here for some reason, I guess maybe leave another little bit.
No, you just take that stone with you if you get it.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
No, you wouldn't break into Hogwarts and do all this twice.
Yeah, I guess so. Hermione figures out the puzzle and Harry decides that he'll be the one to go forward. And Hermione does ask him, to her credit, like, what are you going to do? And Harry is kind of like, I'll figure it out. And he says, too, that, like, I'm not going to last long against Snape. You go back and take the brooms from the key room and tell somebody what's going on.
Yes.
Get help. And Hermione, they have this good little conversation here. I'll read it directly. Hermione asks, but Harry, what if you know who's with him? Well, I was lucky once, wasn't I? Said Harry, pointing at his scar. I might get lucky again. Hermione's lip trembled, and she suddenly dashed at Harry and threw her arms around him. Hermione! Harry, you're a great wizard, you know. I'm not as good as you, said Harry, very embarrassed as she let go of him. Me, said Hermione. Books and cleverness. There are more important things. Friendship and bravery and... Oh, Harry, be careful.
I would argue that the two things she listed, friendship and bravery, would be two things that Hermione still has.
That's my problem here. I think she's selling herself short. She's saying...
Friendship, very clear.
Yeah.
And bravery, she's in Gryffindor for starters. And she showed her bravery by coming with Harry, getting this far, being willing to go back, save Ron, and fly up to
alert Dumbledore or McGonagall or whoever. Yeah, totally. So I think she's kind of framing herself as just books and cleverness, which Hermione is so much more than that. So I don't love this exchange, but I think it is important to the ethos of these books that friendship and bravery are the two most important things. And those are the qualities that we see in every single one of these characters, Ron, mm-hmm. Harry, Hermione, and Neville in this chapter. It's a great chapter. And that's a great note to end it on. However, there is another little detail that we cannot overlook, the cliffhanger of the chapter.
Yeah. So Harry has Hermione drink the potion first and leave. Then mm-hmm. he drinks his own, goes through the black flames. And in the last chamber, there was already someone there, but it wasn't Snape. It wasn't even Voldemort.
And that's where the chapter ends. What a good cliffhanger. I always imagine a parent reading these books to a child chapter by chapter as like a bedtime story.
And just shutting the book.
Yeah. And being like, well, that's the chapter, time for bed. I would totally do that as a parent. And I think there's something to be said for that, too, because there's this great process with books and anything, television shows, movies, of getting to speculate about what comes next. And of course, you get to do it with the Harry Potter books if you're, you know, reading them book by book and saying, like, what's going to come next? You know, what's going to happen in the next book? How's Harry going to get out of this? But there's a lot of fun to be had, too, I think, chapter by chapter with cliffhangers like this of speculating, like, who is there?
And this very much is a cliffhanger that you only get if you do not, if you're not if the you one holding the book.
Yes, because so if you turn the page. Yeah. If you turn the, not even just the first word, the chapter art gives it away.
The third word is what gives it away as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, but that is the end of the chapter. That's where we're going to stop it because no spoils. And let's take care of spell of the week. This is a very special spell of the week for us as a podcast called Podtrificus Totalis. Our spell of the week this week is Petrificus Totalis.
So what happens to Neville is he is his arms snap to his sides, his legs sprang together, and his whole body, with his whole body rigid, he fell flat on his face, stiff as a board. So it freezes you entirely, and Hermione explains it as the full body bind. That would be why we say, don't move a muscle.
Yes.
The podcast has started.
How about the etymology of the incantation?
So the root of this curse's incantation seems to be the Latin word petra, rock, ficus, making or doing something, and totus, whole or entire. Also, petrify, meaning to turn into stone, which describes the freezing. Full body
yeah.
curse.
Yeah. Yeah. I like also knowing that we can kind of look at our title, Podtrificus Totalis, podcast. What was the second thing? The
Ficus. Making or doing something.
Making or doing something. So we're making a doing a podcast.
Totus. Whole.
Whole. We're doing
optimistically,
a podcast
we'll do
about
the whole series.
Yeah. What a nice thought. Thanks, Latin or Greek. Did you say it was Greek?
Latin.
Okay.
Yeah, it's used a couple more times later on, but we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that is the chapter, the penultimate chapter. We've got one more to do with Philosopher's Stone, but we would like to encourage our readers to reach out to us. You can follow us on Twitter at Podtrificus, where our display picture is Neville frozen. At Podtrificus on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Tumblr. We do have a YouTube page. If you like to listen to podcasts on YouTube, you can do that. You can email us at owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. Feel free to send us your thoughts on our chapter discussion, your thoughts on the chapter itself, any corrections for things that we might have gotten wrong, anything like that. Send it to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. Podtrificustotalis.com is our website where we post detailed show notes. We have transcripts for some of the episodes. And of course, you can listen and find links to all of these different places.
Yeah, we link pretty much everything we reference.
Yes, that
too. I say we, meaning Cassie does this.
She does all the work.
All of the work. I do very little.
Yeah, yeah. I provide those links both to give, of course, citations for our research. And also, if you want to learn more about the things that we talk about, that you can kind of start your exploration from there. So sometimes there's something that we just implicitly reference, but that, you know, I want everybody to be up to speed on what it is and also to encourage you to do your own research and that kind of thing.
I do also recommend the website google.com. it has a lot of great stuff. You can find a lot of things there. Mm-hmm. So if you're ever curious about anything, google.com.
We are particularly indebted to the Harry Potter Wiki and the Harry Potter Lexicon for the excellent efforts that they put forward as well. And I link back to them constantly. Yeah. So you can find all that on podtrificustotalis.com. And please send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. And you can subscribe to us on any of the major podcast providers, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts. And feel free to, if wherever you listen to podcasts, if they have a rating or a review system, leave us a nice one or leave us a mean one if you want, but we prefer the nice ones.
Prefer, but don't require. So
yeah, I mean, if you
don't want to,
yeah.
You don't have to. And if you really want to rag on us, feel free to as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I do read all of those. And yeah, so you can join us for chapter 17.
The Man with Two Faces.